Hi everyone, this is Diva from Blood Hunter and you're listening to the Metal Pit Podcast.
Welcome to the Metal Pit Podcast. This is where we dive into the albums and bands that made metal what it is today, or maybe in this case, hard rock. I'm your host, Blake, and my guest is Georgina. I'm writer from the Metal Pit. How are you today, Georgina?
I'm doing very well. Thank you for having me, Blake. Hi, everybody.
Okay, and as always, visit our website, The Metal Pit, at www.themetalpit.org. And you can follow us on Facebook and Instagram at The Metal Pit. And for the podcast, there's themetalpitpodcast.com for the website with all the episodes on it. And you can follow our our Facebook and Instagram for the podcast, which is at The Metal Pit Podcast. And our YouTube channel is at The Metal Pit 666, where you can view, if you want to, our 100th episode that was just released last week. And I actually put it on YouTube, even though I don't know if I want to keep doing that, or I'm not going to keep doing it all the time, but maybe once in a while we'll do that. But anyway, it's there if you want to watch it. Watch me looking down at my notes most of the time. And if you have any suggestions, comments, whatever, email me podcast@themetalpit.org. And we're going way back in the time machine today to, and I guess we won't even really call this a heavy metal group, even though they did start to get some heavy metal, but they did inspire a lot of heavy metal. But we're going to talk about Aerosmith. You want to say anything about Aerosmith before I read a little blurb on them?
Boy, I can say this is that this album was released like 50 years ago, Blake. This is like the anniversary. It was actually released, I think, on April 8th.
Oh, so, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So this album is half a century old, everybody. Yeah.
And the band members are like, I don't even know, do they still play? They haven't had an album in a long time. I don't know if they still play or not.
No, I'm not sure.
70s, at least.
Yeah. I see them online all the time. Like, they're always, their clips on Facebook and stuff like that. I think they're more into doing interviews. I'm not sure.
Yeah. Well, let me say, okay, so they're, in case anybody doesn't know, American rock band, we'll call them, formed in Boston in 1970. And of course, the group consists of Steven Tyler, singer, bassist Tom Hamilton, drummer Joey Kramer, and guitarists were Joe Perry and Brad Whitford. I don't know. Again, I don't know if they're currently doing stuff, because most of my info here is from Wikipedia here, some of this bio stuff. So I don't know if that's a current band or that means that was the band, because I don't think I even made a note of the band for this album. And we're doing the third album, Toys in the Attic. Sorry, we didn't mention that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, so their style was rooted in blues-based hard rock, and then they expanded into some heavy metal. They did a rap thing with Walk This Way and Run DMC. Yeah. And then they did, when they inspired, influenced lots of glam metal, like Motley Crue, probably Cinderella, the hair metal kind of stuff, I think was influenced by them. And let's see, and I guess they were sometimes referred to as the Bad Boys from Boston.
Oh, I can see that. I can see that. Yeah.
And they have 15 studio albums, but they haven't had an album since, I think it was 2012 was the last one, I think. Like a real studio album. Okay. And do you remember, this is going back a long way, I'm sure you were in school, but do you remember when you first listened to Aerosmith? Probably, was it like this album, probably? Walk This Way, maybe?
Oh, I definitely. The thing is, this soundtrack is a part of my childhood. Toys in the Attic and their next album, I think, what was it, 1976 Rocks, are, in my opinion, are the very best of Aerosmith. And this actually was my first album that I ever purchased. That's why when you asked me to do it, I was like, oh my God, this was like the first vinyl record I ever bought. And I bought it because the toys were on the cover. And this is a true story. I was drawn to the toys on the cover. And I remember every day when I got home from school, I would listen to the whole album over and over again. And then I remember my dad had this like miniature pool table in the basement. And I would sit there. I was like a cool young girl. Well, hey, matter. And I would sit there and I was like, playing pool table, miniature pool table. And then I would listen to this. And as I prepped for this podcast, listening to it again, it brought back all of these memories of me being a young teenager. And I think I must have been the only kid on my block that was listening to this. Yeah. So this was definitely a big part of my music foundation. And the thing that I love about Aerosmith is the chemistry that they have with each other. I've never seen them live, but, you know, I watched videos over the years. And there's this beautiful, playful banter between Steven Tyler and Joe Perry that would give me butterflies over the years. So it always goes back to this album. Like I said, when you asked me to talk about Toys in the Attic, this definitely has a big dent and notch in my life because this is the first album I ever purchased.
Now, I think for me, I probably heard either Walk This Way or Sweet Emotion on the radio. It was probably the first time I ever heard them. I'm thinking, I can't remember if my brothers had it, possibly. I have two older brothers. They could have had Aerosmith. But I don't know. I just think it was probably on the radio that I heard it. And when I started playing guitar, I always wanted to try to learn how to do Walk This Way, the intro thing. And I don't think I ever did figure it out because I'm not very good at playing the guitar.
Well,
but there's lots of notes here. Oh, and I did see on Wikipedia, they toured in 2023 and that said the farewell tour. But of course, lots of other bands have had farewell tours.
No, exactly. Yeah, I'm laughing here because I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes, I did three or four of them.
Very true.
But anyway, let's see. I did have some notes. I know you have some notes you might say at the end. Now I've lost it because there's so much since they've been around for so long.
They have one interesting factoid. I mean, it wasn't really a factoid, but it's just a year, right? Just being in the 70s. Like when I think of the 70s era, my parents came to America in the 70s. And I think of bell bottoms. I remember my mother was a very busty woman and she would wear these beautiful bed bottoms, these beautiful bell bottoms and these great looking shirts. And I think going to Times Square and traveling with my mom on West 44th Street, I think I remember the original Record Plant where these guys recorded this album in Times Square. And that was the era of Taxi Driver. You ever seen the movie Taxi Driver?
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Oh my God, if you watch it, that's how New York City was. And just what you did back then is like you watched out for muggers and hustlers and all these like cheesy, mediocre themed chain restaurants and stuff like that. But there's this vibe when I just listen to this, I just think of all these cool things. And anyway, it was such a great, great year. Obviously, I was just a little girl, but there was some kind of vibe to the 70s. And this record definitely just meshes in there and it takes us back to such a different era in time. It really does.
Yeah, now I lost where I was going to just say something, and now I've lost where it is. My stupid tablet here.
Oh, and one thing is, you're a New Yorker, at least the New Yorkers that are listening to it, Rudy Giuliani was the mayor back then. And what he tried to do, he tried to turn that area from like the den of decadence, but it was a little seedy, into this like sterile, any type of city USA. But that's where that West 44th Street, that area is just so convoluted and it's just got so much character.
Okay. Maybe we'll get to the songs and maybe I'll find what I was looking for later. Because there's so much on it was part of the Wikipedia, but now I can't find it because I moved my. But anyway, we'll get back. We'll do the album and then. Okay, did I mention anything about this album? Okay, I can say this. It was, the third studio album released, as you said, April 8th, 1975 on Columbia Records. Sweet Emotion, the first single, and the original version of Walk This Way were both released that same year. And those are probably the two most recognizable songs. Maybe Love in an Elevator or Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Yeah.
But let's see. And it's the band, even though it was a third album so long ago, it is the band's most commercially successful studio LP in the United States with 9 million copies sold.
Bam.
Okay. So let's get to this. We're going to now. Yeah, we're ready. Toys in the Attic. What about the first track?
You want me to start this?
Yeah, you can.
All right. The title song on this album, it just bursts with this like furious energy. And from my understanding, it was built on a riff that Perry came up with on a 1955 Les Paul that Johnny Thunders had recently given him. I read that and I was like, wow, that's really cool. He's like friends with Johnny Thunders. I was like, that is really cool. The track is unique and you've got Whitford alongside Tyler and it's just this rollicky opening track and it's a statement about their mental health at the time, I think. It's not just a song. It's like, this kind of metaphor for chaos and I don't know, you've got this electrifying guitar riff, and then you've got Steven Tyler's raw vocals, and then you get this youthful rebellion and this like phonetic energy that comes with it. And it takes you through this attic of our psyche, where these forgotten dreams and these unrestrained emotions, bam, collide with each other. And you get like this whirlwind sound. And it's just great. I just love it. It just Poison in the Attic kind of invites you to like confront like this wild, untamed aspect of your inner self. I love this chunk. I really do. I love this whole damn album, so I can't say anything negative about it.
Now, I didn't really go to look at any lyrics or anything like that. Not that so I don't have any of that like I sometimes do. And I didn't go to that set list thing to do that either. But anyway,
yeah, toys in the attic, lights, forces, reason out then is so great. Oh my God.
Oh, I did read, you already said it, but I probably erased that. I read about Toys in the Attic too, but I don't really have anything to add on it, I don't think. It's one of my favorite songs on the album, besides, of course, the two hits, I guess you want to call it. But this album is so old, and I didn't really listen to a lot of other Aerosmith albums. I listened to Greatest Hits that came out, whenever that came out, way back then, because it was probably right after the next album, probably, because it was really early. I don't know why a band is releasing the Greatest Hits album after four albums, but it was sometime in there because it had Dream on it and stuff, and half of this album, probably. But, and actually, I did read, I didn't make a note of it, but they said the first two albums were just songs that they wrote, but that they were playing as they were touring and stuff. But this album, they really wrote, like they really, I don't know.
Yeah.
Really sat down to write songs for a good album, or not that the first two weren't good, but they really got serious and it's a best-selling album. So I guess it worked. Anyway, yeah. Now we slow down a little bit. And suddenly we're in a weirdly creepy blues rock tale about poor little girls and bad men called Uncle Salty. And do you have an Uncle Salty, Georgina, or did you?
I was a good kid. I was a boring good kid. But you know what? This may be one of my favorite theme tracks from these guys. It's mid-tempo, but it's gritty. And it's the sad tale of a fallen woman. And she cried at night, right? And no one came. So it begins with this straightforward, like this chord progression. And then you have this like highly melodic bass, this bass line. And before it ramps up, as Tyler narrates the tale of a sorrowful and isolated child who ultimately turns to prostitution, right? So the song presents a strange blend of surface beauty and this underlying creepiness. And in this subtle contrast, that adds like this edge to the entire album. And then you've got like this Monkees style psychedelia when Perry sings, "Ooh, Oh, it's a sunny day right outside my window. This is great stuff. I love this song. This is like one of my favorites. I always crack up when I listen to Uncle Salty.
What was I gonna? Oh, wait, what are we? Yeah, Uncle Salty. Yeah, he was. See, I had more about this, but again, I must have lost it. But anyway, he said he was thinking about an orphanage when he wrote the lyrics. So it was Tyler, I guess, that wrote the lyrics to this one, right? Maybe he wrote the lyrics the most, and maybe Joe Perry wrote the riffs or something. I don't know. But or they wrote together, I guess, mostly it was those two. And he said, I tried to make the melody weep from the sadness felt when a child is abandoned.
Oh, yeah.
And let's see. And Salt, I don't know if this is like a true story that he knows or if he just made it up, but he said Salty worked in a home for lost children and had his way with this little girl or something. And then that little girl, whatever. Yeah. And then Uncle Salty, whatever. Uncle Salty, I don't know. Okay.
If there's something like that, like the creepy uncle, let's call it the creepy uncle. Remember Uncle Ernie and what do you call it? And Tommy, what Keith Lone played.
No.
Uncle Ernie, same vibe.
Okay, now we go to Adam's Apple. And what do you think of Adam's Apple?
Steven Tyler is teaching us about the Garden of Eden here, kids. That pretty much basically, but it's another great riff that's implanted in here. Eve gets a bad rap when it comes to the apple. And Lord, it was love at first bite. Right? So it features this provocative vocal performance. You got these gentle horns that support the chorus, and it brings this like appealing touch. And you have this harmonious guitar beat exchanges in the background between Whitford and Perry. And then you have this deep connection that kind of shows you this evolving sound that Aerosmith is producing. Great song. I'm not going to say the language here. I love this song. I love all these songs. Damn it.
Yeah. And yeah, they're very bluesy, of course. You
can hear yes.
Their songs. And yeah, the song is bluesy, bouncy, and blasphemous.
Oh, yeah. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah, okay. And then we go to, I guess, probably the most popular Aerosmith song ever, I'm going to say, and that's Walk This Way, which I'm sure we've heard too many times now. But anyway, let me hear what you have to say about Walk This Way.
The way that Kramer took advantage of the open-close hi-hat really pretty much shows, and it keeps the band together with that. And everyone kind of says that Aerosmith were always considered a poor man's Rolling Stones. But I sometimes hear a lot of James Brown in their music, believe it or not. I was a high school loser, never made it with the ladies, was a lyric, right? that resonated more than it should have to a lot of high school boys and maybe girls too. Yeah, that's basically a chuckle among the guys. And what's even cooler is that in 1986, you had that hip-hop group, Run DMC, who also covered Walk This Way in collaboration with Aerosmith. So it got another generation and another genre to respect Aerosmith. And I thought that was really cool. Obviously, one of their flagship songs. Everybody's heard this song. People have redone it. People karaoke this. It's still out there and everyone loves it.
And Tyler, he kind of raps on the song before rap was a thing. So this could be the first song that has any rap in it. I'm sure there's lots of people that would argue that. But anyway, now I did read, let's see, they were having trouble figuring out, they needed one more song, I think. I think this is actually the last song they made for the album. Because they were having trouble, they liked his riff, Joe Perry's riff, but they didn't have any lyrics to go with it. And they struggled to find lyrics. Until they went to see the movie Young Frankenstein, and there was a line in the movie where, I don't have the character's name, but anyway, probably maybe it was Young Frank, or maybe it was the doctor. I don't even know the movie. It's some comedy. I think Gene Wilder might have been in it.
Oh, Young Frankenstein?
Yeah, okay.
Abnormal, of course. You ever see this? Hilarious.
I might have seen it once, but years ago. But I guess there's a line where he tells someone to walk this way. And so that's where they got the line for that.
Wow.
He wrote the words in a stairwell after losing his original draft. Cab.
That's a great story.
The lyrics about teenage sex, playful rhymes, early rap. Let's see. Perry admired how filthy and catchy it was. And was there something else I was going to say? Or maybe that was it. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. So that was probably, when, like I said, it was probably the first song I ever heard by Aerosmith. Maybe it was Sweet Emotion. It was either Sweet Emotion or Barker. Sorry to remember, they were both on the radio. Of course, all we had back then.
Right.
Okay, so now I want to know, Georgina, do you like my big 10-inch record?
Well, Rick, I still shuffle around the house listening to it. This one's, you know what? I was a huge big band swing fan, and I love the era. I listened to Duke Ellington, Count Basie, and I even love Benny Goodman, believe it or not. And Aerosmith truly embraces the rhythm and the vibe of this big band classic here, which I think, from what I read, it's from who originally made this famous, Blake Bull Moose, right? Bull Moose Jackson, back in 1952. So,
of course, I have all his albums.
Yeah, I knew you did, damn it. So then basically what Aerosmith did here was genius. They resurrected a tune from 1952, and this was a rare moment of comedy from Aerosmith. I absolutely love this tune. There's this great harmonic solo, liquor, what is it, quote unquote, liquor, just to make her flinch. And basically, the band demonstrates their versatility here by they're showing us that they're able to tackle like various music styles with elegance and obviously with a lot of flair. You've got these vibrant horns, you have this honky-tonk type of piano throughout, and Aerosmith allows the song to basically shine. While Perry and Whitford, they contribute some of the most stylish riffs here that someone could come across. And Tyler, being his charismatic self, and you guys know that is like 110% true, he enjoys this, like, the double meaning of the lyrics, right? What got him brilliant, I mean, say about expressing his delight as he sings, "She loves my big 10-inch. And
what double meaning do you mean, Georgina?
I don't know. Come on, read between the lines. You're a Greek man. The lines, young man. And I think it's just great. It's a great song. Always brings everybody a smile. Good stuff.
They pause before they say record, of course. So they say, "He just loves my big 10-inch record of favorite blues."
Yes. Excellent.
She gets all excited when she begs for my big 10-inch record of a band that plays blues.
Genius.
And so I guess, so as you said, by Bull Moose Jackson, so it's a cover. And that was an R&B hit in 52. But I guess they heard it on the Dr. Demento's radio show.
Do you know
Demento?
I've heard of Dr. Demento.
I don't know if this guy in 52 meant it to be a joke or not. I don't know if the lyrics are exactly the same. I didn't really look at that. But anyway, it was played on the Dr. Demento show, and that's where they heard it. And I guess that's why they wanted to cover it. And because I think they knew Dr. Demento or something. I don't know. But anyway, so I guess that's why they covered it. So, yeah, so that's the best song ever made, probably. Okay.
All right.
Okay, then we go to Sweet Emotion. And what do you think?
I love this track. It never grows old. It's sexy. Really, as sexy as F. You know what I mean? As an opener. You've got this track opens with this relaxed vibe, infused with all these like psychedelic elements, and you've got these marimba, you got these shakers, and you got this voice box. but like gradually, slowly intensifies, and it just seamlessly transitions into one of the greatest rock riffs that were ever created. I love this song. I've put this on my player like 10 million times, like over and over the years. It just always pops up somewhere. And however, the song is not like just defined by these like awesome riffs, and there are plenty of them in there. But the lyrics, who can forget some sweet talking? Who can forget some sweet talking mama with a face like a gent, right? It stands out as a remarkable collaboration between Tyra and Hamilton. And if you see the importance of songwriting and melody here, and basically illustrates one of the finest rock music moments with soul and with rhythm. It is exceptional. Love Sweet Emotion. Love this track. I'm not joking either. I really do.
I love this track too, but I don't really want to add it.
Oh man, man.
I listened to that one so much. So we got, oh, Rat would be another group that was inspired by Aerosmith, I think that name just.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, and I already said Motley Crue before, and I'm going to say Motley Crue again here soon. But anyway, so No More, No More is the next one. And what do you think of this one?
This is probably the most underrated track. And it's propelled by this great lead guitar work and piano. And Stephen paints a portrait of like endless Holiday Inns and like dubious decision-making when it comes to like female companionship here. At least that's what I'm getting from this song. And Stephen delivers this impressive performance, and he's reflecting on his like complicated feelings towards this crazy rock and roll lifestyle. And he says, if I don't stop changing, I'll be writing out my will. No man, no more. So he might be right there, but he's got Mistwar. The precision of the piano melodies enhance the appeal. And it's a lovable song. It really is. And Kramer deserves a special mention because he's maintaining his groove throughout the entire, I think it's like, what, 4.5 minutes of this track? Great song. Great song. I think when I posted this on my Facebook page, one of my friends is like, this is my favorite track of Aerosmith. And I'm like, really? I said to myself, I picked this one. I was like, wow. It is a great song, though. It is a great song.
Yeah, I like the start of it with the guitars, how it's like slow, but whatever. But yeah, and it is, as you said, about, I guess, life on the road, the boredom, chicks, the disillusion, the Holiday Inns, the jailbait. That was,
yeah,
Georgina.
I was a Van Halen fan when I was a little teeny girl. I would have been a groupie then for Van Halen. Oh, yeah.
For Van Halen? Mm-hmm. Aerosmith?
No.
Now we got the song. I should have waited for my Rat comparison now, but now we got the song Around, which of course is also the name of a Rat single. Probably their biggest song was called Round, and I'm sure they probably got the idea from this. But what do you think of Round and Round?
This is a truly unique song. It presents like a slow, gritty groove, and this relentless riff that persists for, how long is this song, Blake? This is another long song.
5 minutes.
5 minutes. And Tyler's vocals, they a sense of malevolence. And it's reflecting on the erosion of trust in a failing relationship, right? Going round and round. Amidst the heaviness of this song, you see this chord progression. It provides like a little bit of this little bit of light and brightness yet. But this like brief little interlude doesn't detract from the dark energy that kind of fuels the whole darn piece. And it's, I think, one of the hardest tracks that they've ever done. Did you read about that as well?
No, I'm just from listening to it, I would say.
Right. Yeah. And I think this points the way towards where they would eventually go on the Rocks album. And I think Round and Round serves as a reminder that while life may be a never-ending cycle, there's always hope and strength to be found in music. I know it's a big strength for me. I love heavy metal and rock and roll.
And yeah, this song is even a little doomy, a little bit. And yeah,
definitely.
Probably the heaviest one on the album. Probably, and maybe, I don't know, like I said, I didn't really listen to a lot of Aerosmith after. Like, I'd have to probably listen to Get Your Wings again. I'm sure I did listen to it once, but I haven't. I listen to this album that we're talking about now once in a while. I'll throw it on or whatever on my Spotify, but I never listened to any of the other ones. I did back in the day, like the Love in an Elevator and that Dude Looks Like a Lady stuff.
Well,
Pump or whatever, that album. I got into more heavier stuff, so I got away from it. Now this song, the next one, the last song, You See Me Crying, I swear, and I listened to that this week, I was sure I was hearing Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue starting. But anyway, what do you think of You See Me Crying?
I see that connection, actually, just like listening to the song in my head. And I was like, yeah, you could see that little connection going on there with Motley Crue.
Yeah, the sounds piano a bit, part is really hearing.
You see me crying, Blake? I see you crying.
You don't have your camera on.
No, I don't. This closing track of the album established a template for, I guess, several of Aerosmith's ballads. And I think this one was heavily influenced by the Beatles. It had this kind of this Grand West style and this kind of orchestration. It's a lovely piano ballad. And I read that this is Liv Tyler's favorite Aerosmith tune.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I like this ballad more than most of the other late period ballads that they have. The piano, strings. It, don't beat me over the head with a stick. It sounds a little bit like Queen to me. You got, right? This elegant piano-driven rock ballad. It captures Tyler's like sorrow. He's in this like sorrowful state. And he's openly expressing his deep longing for this unnamed lover. It's powerful. It's an emotionally charged ballad, and it's skillfully composed. And it's impossible for me, at least, not to be captivated by it. And maybe I'm just a smush. You see me crying. It resonates deeply with anyone who's experienced love or the end of a meaningful relationship. And I've been there a couple of times, right? And recently too. And it's not fun. And the song's got this timeless appeal, and it has the ability to connect with fans on a deep personal level. So for me, it makes it a true classic in the rock and roll genre. And it's making me want to grab a Kleenex right now. Like,
snap out of it.
Sorry,
and yeah, I don't usually like ballads, as I've said on this podcast, probably every episode.
Yes, you have.
But I don't mind that one. Like, I don't shut it off when that comes on. It may be fitting that they put it at the ends for people that don't like it, but I don't know. I don't mind it, and I like the Dream On ballad too, but those would be the only two ballads I even really remember. No, Aerosmith would be Dream On and You See Me Crying, again, from my lack of really listening to it too much. Okay, now we're going to rate it. What are you rating it?
Oh, God. I have a Toys in the Attic. Remains, to me at least, one of the band's best. And it's, this product is so well produced. And I give it a 10.
Whoa.
Yes, I'm giving this a 10. I'm giving this bitch a 10.
I think I'm gonna give this 9 big 10-inch records out of 10.
Well, good one, buddy.
Man, you said you've never seen them live.
I haven't. I wish I had, but I haven't.
I did see them live once.
That must have been a great show.
It's hard to remember. It's so long ago. But see, they played with. Let's see, it was Aerosmith's tour, but they brought, Skid Row, I think, was the openers.
Oh, I could see that.
But there was also Warrant, I think, was also there. And then Metallica was also there.
Oh, man, I'm jealous.
And this, so I can't remember the year, but I would say it was, after Injustice for All. It wasn't Metallica's tour. They were just a special guest. I'm not really sure exactly why. But anyway, so it was a nutty kind of a show because Metallica was still new then to... Because if the people were there to see Aerosmith, they were the older people at the time there to see Aerosmith, and they might not have known Metallica yet. All they knew was that they played heavy metal, fast heavy metal. So there was, this was at CNE Stadium in Toronto, which is where the Toronto Blue Jays used to play many years ago. But there was like 50,000 people there, I think.
Oh my God.
There was fights all over the place. Because the Aerosmith fans didn't really like the Metallica fans because of their banging their heads and whatever, all the shit they were doing. So there was all kinds of fights for some reason. I don't know why, but I just remembered that there was fights all with, there was a bunch of group fights. The thing was that 90% of the people's t-shirts were Metallica.
Did Steven Tyler come out bare naked? Was he just wearing like pants and a bunch of like his headbands? He's got this style. Like, I think there's so many people. I think the person that I think really topped this style, because Steve Perry, he's got that thing where he dances around a little bit like Mick Jagger. But I think Ian Astbury he's the English singer from the band The Cult. When I look at him swinging around, I'm like, this sounds like the English version of Mr. Tyler. Like, he's influenced so many people in style and his, you know, his stage performance. So I was just wondering, I was like, did he come out with a headband?
I don't, the only thing feathers? I remember about Aerosmith's performance was that during Walk This Way, Sebastian Bach joined them on stage.
Uh-huh.
And he's from Canada and Ontario. So he joined them on, and he was, of course, the singer of Skid Row at the time. He joined them on stage for Walk This Way, but that's really all I remember about Aerosmith's thing. Because I was probably there to see Metallica too. Even though I did Aerosmith also, but I do remember I was really there to see Metallica, or foremost, whatever. But I don't remember anything about Metallica's set either, or whatever, except people were some idiots that didn't know anything, were saying stuff like, well, I hope they play one, or whatever, but whatever.
Right.
So yeah, I believe that's the only time I ever seen them live. But, oh, I did have some. Okay, you have some notes, too, and I have some notes, too, that I finally found what I was looking for. But
you want to go first? You want to go first?
No, you go first.
All right. I've got six things that everyone should know about Aerosmith. And let's see. The first one is, and you mentioned this in the beginning, was that the band was formed in 1970 in Boston, and their self-titled debut album was released in 1973. Number two is the group was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2001. Number three, also in 2001, Aerosmith performed at a Super Bowl halftime show along with NSYNC and Britney Spears. Yes.
He's hot. Yes,
he totally is. Number four, Steven Tyler, lead singer, since the band's formation, is the oldest of the band members, having turned... Now he's 77. In March, he turned 77 in March of 2025. Number five, Aerosmith has won 4 Grammy Awards in its 50-plus year career. Now that's impressive. And finally, number six, the band's number one hit came from a movie soundtrack, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, from Armageddon in 1998. Those are my six. How about you, Blake?
Okay, now I don't really necessarily know. These are just things more... Okay, whatever. 1978, the band starred as a future villain band in the movie Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. I know what that is. It's the Beatles, of course, but I don't know if you've seen the movie or even knew that part. But they made, of course, Aerosmith was big with, they appeared on Wayne's World sketch on Saturday Night Live in 1990. Yep. And then, of course, they were in the movie Wayne's World playing, or Wayne's World 2, or Wayne, I think it was Wayne's World 2.
One of them, right?
No, one. Yeah. No, it was one. Because they had a festival and they played at this festival and whatever. Mike might go find there. I don't remember, but anyway, yeah. Let's see. And they were also appeared on The Simpsons in the Flaming Moe's episode in 1991. No, it was Wayne's World 2. Sorry, it's the next line. Oh, Wayne's World 2 in 1993. They were in that. They were in a John Travolta Uma Thurman movie called Be Cool. Think about that one. And their song Dazed and Confused was on the soundtrack and start of the movie of Dazed and Confused, the 1993 movie, which is one of my favorite movies. And it's all 70s music. I could even handle hearing Kiss on the soundtrack. And let's see. And they've appeared in some video games. I think that's all I got here. Yeah, so that's it, I think, as far as I know. Okay.
All right.
So we're going to finish with our top 10 albums from 1975. Now, I don't know if we'd even consider any of these heavy metal. Maybe a couple of them are heavy metal, but of course, it's a 75. It's really before heavy metal was a thing. But it's mostly, well, hard rock, mostly hard rock for me anyway. I'm assuming you have some, but maybe you got something else. I will let you go first.
Okay. Should I work my way up from 1 to 10, or should I go 10 and 8 to 1?
10 to 1, I guess.
All right. Number 10, everybody, I am picking Queen, A Night at the Opera. 9 is ZZ Top Fandango. 8 is Rainbow. Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. 7 is Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here. 6 is Kiss Alive. You're laughing.
No, it's okay.
5 is Black Sabbath, Sabotage. 4, I love Jeff Beck. I picked Blow by Blow. I really do. I love Jeff Beck. Jeff Beck, he's a great guitarist. Was now. Rest in peace. 3 is Bad Company. I'm a big Bad Company fan, Strange Shooter. 2 is one of my favorite albums. Maybe one day we'll cover this one. Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti. I love Custard Pie. That's one of my favorite songs. And number 1 is Aerosmith, Tons in the Attic, everybody. This was a no-brainer for me. And that's my top 10, Bray.
Okay. Now, where is my... yeah, okay. Now, I had a little trouble getting 10, so I have a greatest hits album on my list.
Oh, that's all right.
But my number 10 is ZZ Top. Fandango has the song Tush, and who doesn't like Tush? And my number 9 is Queen, A Night at the Opera. So we flip-flopped on those ones, but of course, Bohemian Rhapsody on it, which was also on Wayne's World. My number 8 is Nazareth and their album Hair of the Dog.
Oh, man. Wow. Ooh.
I probably had that on 8-track. My number 7 is Budgie with their album Bandolier. Do you know Budgie? Do you?
No. Oh. No, I don't. Okay. I don't.
I think Metallica did a cover of a Budgie song.
Oh, did they?
But which I can't remember which one it is.
Oh, now. Damn it. You're going to make me look it up.
But it's not on this album, I don't think. But there's a song called Napoleon Bonaparte 1 and Napoleon Bonaparte 2. Clever thing. Yeah, so that's got that. Number 6, I got Nazareth again with Greatest Hits, because I remember having that album and Bad Boy was on it. And I think those are the only 2 Nazareth albums I ever had, where it's Hair of the Dog and Greatest Hits.
Really?
But it's what had a couple of songs from Hair of the Dog probably on it too. My number 5 is Ted Nugent with his Ted Nugent album, which I guess is his first album. And it has Stranglehold on it and a few songs. I know.
Oh, it's a great song. It's a great song.
Some people don't like Ted Nugent because of how he is, but I don't care. He was good back then, and that's all I care about. My number 4 is Aerosmith, Toys in the Attic. My number 3 is Rainbow, Richie Blackmore's Rainbow. And my number 2, which wasn't on your list, is Alice Cooper. And Welcome to My Nightmare.
Oh, my God. Yeah. How could I miss that one? But, yeah, that's a good one.
I still listen to that regularly. Black Widow, and it's kind of weird and stuff. And it's really the only Alice Cooper album that I ever listened to anymore is that one. And my number 1, which is also one that you said, Led Zeppelin's Physical Graffiti. which, yes, it's a long album, though, but yes, that could be a podcast.
I'd love to do that one.
Excellent. So there we are. What time is it? Oh, we're about 45 or 50 minutes. That's okay.
So
Eric, I'm sure people already knew Walk This Way, Sweet Emotion. And they got a little commercial after that, of course, but that's just the way it was back then, stuff like that. But anyway, this album is, like I said, their best-selling album, at least in the United States. And I'm assuming.
I have one, actually, Blake. Sure. How did Aerosmith get their name? Do you know?
No, I don't know, and I don't think I saw that.
Wow. The band's name, Aerosmith, was inspired by drummer Joey Kramer's listening to Harry Nilsson's album, Aerial Ballet. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, I was just skimming my notes here because there's too much going. I know there's a lot of stuff that Joe Perry left the band and then they came back and blah, 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 but we're not going to get on all of that. If you like to read, go to Wikipedia. And read the thousands of words about Aerosmith and the Toxic Twins. That's what Tyler and Perry were sometimes referred to as. And it's surprising they're still alive because I'm sure there was a lot of drugs involved too and alcohol back then.
I didn't even realize that they had, I know that Kiss has an army, but they have, Aerosmith has a fan base as well. They're called the Blue Army. Did you know this?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, the Blue Army is known for its loyalty and passion, often wearing blue jeans and jackets in support of the band. I know you're a big blue jean guy.
Yeah. And that's... wear a jacket. Okay, and this is our, by the way, this is our, since I think, did I say this at the start? This is our 101 episode.
Wow. Time flies, Blake.
Yeah, so I guess we're done here. Again, remember, check out the Metal Pit website. And if you're still listening, I could still use a few more writers, not to maybe write about stuff that's 50 years old, but to write about some new stuff. But yeah, so thanks, Georgina, for joining me.
You're welcome, as always.
And let's see, the next, I think I can pronounce this, the next podcast episode is going to be me and Eric and James from the Metal Pit. We're going to rank Dream Theater's albums from least favorite to favorite, and there's 16 albums, so that's going to take a long time. If you like Dream Theater, look out for that one coming up.
Well, you're a big Dream Theater fan, I know that.
Yeah, but I think they're both bigger, but which is because I had to listen to all the James Theater albums again, and then some of them I don't even remember ever listening to them. Because I think I got into some heavier stuff, so I got away from them. But anyway, so that's what's coming up next. So thanks everybody for listening, and make sure you find us on Facebook, Instagram, and all those places, and we will talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.